Let us bow together in prayer. May the words of my mouth, may the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I wonder how many times I have read these words from the 24th chapter of Luke on Easter Sunday, but never noticed a particular item until this past week. There is no verse 12. The passage goes from verse 11 to verse 13. Well, it didn't disappear totally. There's a footnote after verse 11. In these earlier verses, the story of the woman coming to the tomb and finding it empty, then they leave the tomb, they go to tell their experience to the disciples. And verse 11 reads, "But these words seemed to them," that is, the disciples, "an idle tale, and they did not believe them." And the passage really ends right there. But then there's a footnote in very small print at the bottom of the page. It reads, quote, "Other ancient authorities add," verse 12 reading, quote, "But Peter rose and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home wondering at what had happened." Wondering at what had happened. The question becomes, at least for me, why would this verse, so climatic in Luke's telling of Easter morning, be consigned to a footnote obscurity? Verses 10 to 12 have no parallel in the other three Gospels. They are words of Luke alone. Luke has Peter walking away from the tomb, wondering or amazed. I've come to realize that Luke's Gospel is positively filled with amazed people. Let me give you some other examples. The story of the birth of Jesus. Luke has the night filled with angels telling shepherds where they might find the child. And when the shepherds come to Bethlehem and report all that they have seen and all that had been told to them, Luke says, and I quote, "All who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart." Everyone is astonished. Why wouldn't they be astonished? But Mary holds on to this sense of wonder and treasures it in her heart. Another example. Jesus, at age 12, is left behind in the temple at Jerusalem. And when the people listen to the questions that this young boy raises, Luke says, and I'm quoting, "All who heard him were amazed at his understanding. And Mary scolds her son for worrying his parents, but then Luke says," quote, "she treasured all these things in her heart." Everyone is amazed at this precocious child, but Mary alone searches through that kind of amazement to try to find some deeper meaning. And Luke understands that it takes time for us to come to terms with what God is doing in Jesus Christ. For Luke, faith begins with wonder. with amazement. Walter Brueggemann, who was a fellow student with me at Union back in the Union Seminary, New York City, back in the late 1950s and early 60s, and from my point of view, is probably one of the best Old Testament scholars today. Walter has written, "Thus the beginning is not in assent, but at the most in open wonderment, and perhaps deep down in hidden resentful resistance." End of quote. Today we have the story of the resurrection, and when the women tell the story to the disciples, the reaction was simply dismissed out of hand. They just didn't believe them. But Peter, the story goes, runs to the tomb, stooping and looking in, he sees the claws by themselves. And Luke writes, he went home amazed at what had happened. Notice that Luke does not say that Peter, good faithful Peter, looking at the tomb and on that first Easter morning, immediately concluded that Christ was risen from the dead and sang a few verses of today's opening hymn, "Jesus Christ is risen today." Or did he join our choir singing, "Alleluia, he's risen," with trumpet accompaniment, and then took off to preach the good news to Jerusalem? No, Peter, like everyone else, went away wondering. How do we receive the Easter message today? Throughout our worship service this morning has been the declaration, and I taught it to the children again, "He is risen." But what do we do with that statement? Let's be honest. That thought is really overwhelming. It's so big you can't really get your mind around it. Nothing in all of our experience is like that news. Life we know, death we know, but resurrection is something else altogether. It is not that we listen to the greeting, "Christ is risen," with disbelief. Rather, it's just we don't know what to do with that news. You know, it really should not surprise us that when the disciples heard this from these women who had gone to the tomb, that the disciples considered it, and I quote, "an idle tale." By the way, some of you know the testimony of women was never accepted in any of the courts at that time. Therefore, it could be considered simply an idle tale. Those women had left for the tomb early in the morning, but now they return with the talk of a stone rolled away, a body nowhere to be seen, and two people in dazzling apparel asking, "Why do you seek the living among the dead?" The women recalled how Jesus said he must suffer and die, and now quoting Luke, "on the third day rise." But when the women shared this with the disciples didn't have the slightest clue what to do with that kind of information. That message just didn't compute for them. No experience that they had ever had prepared them to receive that kind of information. And I would dare say that not much has changed in all these centuries of Easter morning since that first one. It still really doesn't make sense, at least not the kind of sense we could really wrap our minds around. I still remember quite clearly the first Sunday I spent with you back in the year 2006. I had arrived to be your pastor the first Sunday of April, and Easter was just 2 weeks away. And during the concerns of the church that morning, Bobby Sterling's hand went up quickly. And when I called on him, he asked, "Who stole the body?" Bobby, it was a legitimate question when you raised it at that time. It's still a legitimate question today. It was asked by the early followers of Jesus. It remains a question for so many today. Those early disciples knew what was possible concerning life and death, and there was just no room for the idea of resurrection. They brushed it off as an idle tale, and they certainly didn't believe the women. You may remember that, I think it was 3 weeks ago, I preached a sermon based on the story of the parable of the prodigal son. And I spoke about individuals, family members, or friends, and in which they become lost to us. And when and we are lost to them because of some episode in our lives. You may remember that I focused particularly on my own family's relationship with my oldest nephew, Tim. But in that sermon, I also referred to a break in friendship with a former colleague in campus ministry, Paul Whaley, who is a Lutheran and for many years was the campus minister at SUNY New Paltz. I spoke of what splintered that relationship, which, by the way, has now been renewed. I explained that what splintered our relationship was theological differences. Well, what split our relationship for a time was our different position on the meaning of the resurrection of Jesus, which he took in a very literal way, Jesus appearing in flesh and blood to those disciples, and I took the language to be metaphorical. Something to be experienced, but really cannot be explained rationally. I believe the writer of the Gospel of Luke understands this. Of the Gospel writers, Luke understands that there are some truths that are so immense, so overwhelming, that our minds and our spirits, it takes a while for minds and spirits to appropriate them for ourselves. To come to terms with all that takes place in Jesus Christ takes time. It takes some serious reflection. And Luke understood that. The Reverend Patrick Wilson, who was the pastor of Williamsburg Presbyterian Church in Williamsburg, Virginia, wrote in an article not long ago, "When in the midst of all the ordinary, real things of our living, something extraordinary or even more real appears, how can we receive it except in wonder?" Wonder is not the same as faith, but it can be the servant of faith, ushering us into the very presence of God. End of quote from Reverend Wilson. Most of the information we receive can be accommodated into the normal, reasonable categories that we live by. The sociologist Peter Drucker has called us the knowledge workers. We're very good at processing information and analyzing new hypotheses. We're very good at it, says Drucker. Knowledge is power, and we possess much knowledge. What do we do then when we are faced with information that cannot be accommodated to our normal, reasonable categories. The news Christ is risen doesn't fit anything that we know. So what are we to do with that? Well, we could just dismiss it. Jürgen Moltmann, a contemporary German theologian, reminds us that for the early thinkers of Christianity, quote, knowing meant something different. It meant knowing in wonder, end of quote. Some things we cannot know by grasping them. Some things we can only know by being grasped by them. By the way, I like that line when I wrote it, so I'm going to repeat it. I think it's pretty good. Some things we cannot know by grasping them, only by being grasped by them. I took as my sermon title this morning an old English word which I think has dropped out of usage, but it's a word I like. That word is wonderstruck. It refers to something seizing us and claiming us beyond any of our conscious deciding. You know, falling in love is like that. And to affirm that Christ is risen is not just about his life, it's about our lives. In his book, Markings, Dag Hammarskjöld wrote, God does not die on the day when we cease to believe in a personal deity, but we die on the day when our lives cease to be illuminated by the steady radiance renewed daily of a wonder, the source of which is beyond all reason. I said earlier, wonder is not the same as faith, but Luke is confident those who are willing to open themselves to wonder will discover the living Christ for themselves. Christ will appear in the normal, ordinary stuff of our living. Such a simple thing as when we come together and we receive the cup and the bread and we call it communion, coming together. Coming to understand it in the life, in the love and the concern that we have for friends and they have for us. In the hope for a time of peace and justice. And those who are open to wonder will experience Christ and know indeed that death has no power over the life we know in him. Such, I believe, was the experience of Albert Schweitzer, whose words we have used as an Easter affirmation of faith every Easter Sunday since I have been here. Let us use it again this day. Please stand if you are able. He comes to us as one unknown, without a name, as of old by the lakeside. He comes to those men who knew him not. He speaks to us the same word, follow thou me, and sets us to the tasks which he has to fulfill for our time. He commands and to those who obey him, whether they be wise or simple, he will reveal himself in the toils and conflicts, the suffering which they shall pass through in his fellowship. And as an ineffable mystery, they shall learn in their own experience who he is.